Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get James Hammond here. Hammer, do you know anything about Dennis Schroeder and what kept him out of practice today?
No, to be honest with you, I got done with you guys, raced home, and then went for a walk. Oh, so okay. I'll check in and see what's going on, but that's never a good thing.
No, I mean, we talked about the game on Friday. He had that moment where I think DeAndre Ayton landed on his foot, his shoe came off, kind of limped off the court, but he came back into the game and played well when he came back and thought that was the end of it. And then today you hear he's potentially out, and they did label it as an ankle. They said it was an ankle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wonder if they're related and if that puts him in danger of not starting the season on time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. I mean, hey, you've designed your entire offseason around the fact that Dennis Schroeder is your point guard. If you open the season and either Malik Monk or Russell Westbrook, who signed this weekend, are, you know, your starting and backup point guards, that's pretty crazy. So I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. But and the Kings just seem to have really, really bad luck right off the bat here. And that's not usually a good sign walking into an 82-game season that you already have, a couple of guys on the IR and maybe one more.
I disagree, James. We just get all of our bad luck out of the way now.
Let's do it.
And it's all uphill after this. Everything yep. is fine after this.
Everything is
everything
awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Very good. I actually don't find this one, James. This to me is a lot, and I like Dennis Schroeder. Has been well outlined and criticized on this show for weeks now. But to me, losing Dennis is a lot different than losing Domas and Keegan. Those are really difficult replacements because of the position group. Obviously, you just signed Russell Westbrook. He's practicing today. He did practice today. He'll practice tomorrow. And if he has to start on Wednesday, he can start, fit right in, and be perfectly fine. And there's enough depth at that position group where if you have to play one, two, hopefully nothing more than three games without Dennis Schroeder, you could do it. Like, you could do it and not be even remotely close into the same position that you are with both Keegan and Domas being out at the same exact time.
Yeah, the backcourt is the position of the depth, the position where you have the most depth. You know, the front court is thin to start, you know, and now we get to the point where you're missing your starting center and power forward walking into a season. That's not at all what, you know, the doctor ordered to open a season. So I agree with you. Schroeder is, like, if there's a position where you could lose somebody, it would be in the backcourt. But even saying that, Russell Westbrook has like one or two practices under his belt. Like he's worked with some of these players in the past. And actually, it's kind of surprising how many of these players he has worked with, whether it's, Domas or Dennis Schroeder or Malik Monk or, you know, name that king. It feels like he's played with Dario Saric. He's played with just about everybody on the roster, which mm-hmm. is weird because I don't think we had the same crossover with Drew Eubanks or with Dennis Schroeder, where they had played with a bunch of the other guys. So I think it's one of those like 6 degrees of Russell Westbrook. It's interesting stuff. We're going to have to wait and see if Schroeder is going to be out and how long he is out for, because if it is a, you know, an ankle sprain or a high ankle sprain, it could be a little bit. But saying that, I thought he was phenomenal in the preseason finale on Friday. I thought he really stepped up with the team shorthanded, and he had his check-in game, and to me it was, you know, the best performance he's had as in a Kings uniform. Still a little concerned that his assist numbers are non-existent. You know, I think he had 2 assists in that game, 1 in the previous one. That's kind of been where he's been at for most of the preseason. But at least the ball was moving better and he was scoring better.
I was just about to ask you, did he get that checking game that you were looking for? What was it, just purely like him hitting shots that, you know, made you feel like he checked in, or did he seem to me seemed a little bit more engaged, at least on the offensive end, than he had in the previous couple of games? He was moving a little different in that game on Friday.
Yeah, I think it's different for every player, but for me, it was the energy. He just played with a lot more energy. Sure, the shots fell, but also I just thought, you know, he was the ringleader, and he was a guy who kept forcing the action in a good way, not in a bad way. I thought he was pushing the tempo. Overall, you know, defensively, I haven't really noticed that much of him, but I do think that it's not a surprise that we saw him have a big game. We saw Keon have a big game. You know, these check-in games that are absolutely necessary when you're getting ready to start a season. And I'd say even Isaac Jones late in that game, I thought he was tremendous in the fourth quarter and really came through, got some rebounds, got some a clutch put back, and started to figure out how he fits into the grand scheme of things with this rotation. So, yeah, good stuff. You know, I know John Bull here brings up it's hard to get assists when your team's shooting 30% from three. But that wasn't the case on Friday. They were lights out. And, you know, their first 10 baskets, 9 of them were assisted, and every single starter had at least 1. Mm. And so to me, that's a good sign. That's the style of play that Doug Christie wants to play. Let's see if it carries over when you actually start getting players back.
You talked about those check-in games. I thought the one you mentioned him from Keon was really, really important, even more so than Dennis. That was the game I really wanted to see. I wanted Keon to have that big night before things got underway on Wednesday.
Yeah, he was just kind of lost, right? He kind of looked lost in the shuffle. And the game before, he played less than 8 minutes. And so we were kind of wondering, when is that moment that you're gonna see Keon step up? And I think what he showed in that game is that he's ready to be one of the 3-point shooters on this team, to step up, and because his team needs it really bad. And, you know, I would like to see Keon shoot 6 to 8 threes a game. He's that good of a shooter, and the stats show the more he shoots, the better he is. And to be honest, the more he shoots, the better the Kings are. You know, I don't remember a bunch of games where Keon Ellis had those blow up games where they lost. Like, when he gives you that different element, when he's a, you know, a sniper from the outside, you're just a much better team. And so I'm hoping that this was sort of a get right game for him, but also one that cemented him as part of the opening rotation, because barring injury, you know, there's a possibility that he could be one of the guys to draw the short straw, and we'll see.
Did you feel like before any injury, like Devin Carter had no shot of playing or being in part of this rotation to start the season, like if everybody was healthy?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way, not with Russell Westbrook, but even before Russell Westbrook, I didn't see a way that he was going to be part of the rotation. Yes, like, Devin is going to, I don't even know, you know, really what he has to do to get on the court, outside of bide his time and hope that there's either trade involving him or a trade involving one of the players ahead of him that opens up space on the floor. I don't know that, you know, it's tough. He's in a losing battle right now, and it's because he has right now five veterans in front of him that play his position or can play his position and just do things that he can't do or more consistent and have a longer track record of doing those things. So, you know, I do think there is a place for him sometimes with his length, with his rebounding ability, with his athleticism. But at the same time, man, how are you going to take minutes away from Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder, Malik Monk, Keon Ellis, Zach LaVine? You're not. So.
Sorry, Devin.
Sorry.
We'll get
maybe,
there, pal.
Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I don't think you are. We were just having this discussion. Like, do things open up a little bit with Dennis out? I don't see a way for him to get out there. Of course, I could be really wrong. I also don't think he's done much to stand out in all of this. I'm not asking you at all to report something, James. Just who do you think? Because it's almost certainly Drew Eubanks starting at the five. Like, there's not a lot you can do to avoid that. Who do you think is starting at the four on Wednesday?
Man, it's tough. To be honest with you, I don't even, you know, they tried Sarge there. They've tried Isaac Jones there. Sarge shoots the three ball really well, and that might give him a leg up. I personally would still shift over DeMar DeRozan, move Keon Ellis into the starting lineup, and move Zach LaVine to the three. But I don't know that they're going to do that. It's really going to have to be like a feel. And, you know, every team is different. Like, who are you up against? But I really like the idea of Keon Ellis starting against Devin Booker. Like, give yourself an opportunity to slow down their number one scoring option. And outside of that, you know, like, they have a lot of centers. They went from having, like, very few centers to all of a sudden they went out and got Mark Williams. They've got Nick Richards. They've got they drafted the kid with, like, the number 9 pick or number 10 pick, Malik. Like, they've got a ton of depth at that position, and it's big. It's a lot of big players. So somebody's going to have to get a body on Mark Williams right off the jump. But if you can play small ball against them and just outrun them, that's also a possibility. So I'm intrigued to see how the Kings handle that situation, how Doug handles, you know, opening night. And someone brought something up in the chat I just want to mention. And it's Stevie B asked, do I think that the Kings are, we're seeing a lot of injuries because of the pace Doug is pushing? And I'll tell you, the two injuries that they have that are, like, very specific, Keegan Murray got swiped down on by Shaedon Sharpe and hurt his hand. That has nothing to do with pace. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I thought Domas got thrown into the front row by Zubats, and that's where he started grabbing at his back and his glutes. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he got hurt. And that has nothing to do with pace of play. Like, if we're seeing a bunch of soft tissue injuries, like a hamstring, but I thought the hamstring was very specific. It was part of being chucked into the front row while they're fighting for a rebound. So that's just all I have on that.
And also to add to that, the Dennis Schroeder thing, we saw what happened. Somebody came and stepped on his foot, you know, after a shot or his ankle. And that seems to be what kind of tweaked his ankle a little bit. So I don't feel like it's from anything that's going on in training camp. And sometimes it's just, you get these freak injuries, you know, that pile up on you, and hopefully it doesn't pile up much more for the Kings, but that's what's been going on with them. Neat Clifford, man. Want to talk to him, talk about him real quick.
It'd be great to talk to him.
Yeah. he finished off a really good preseason with a really, really good game on Friday night against the Lakers. Do you think anything that he's done in this training camp and in this preseason has been able to boost, like, his playing time, the minutes he's going to get, or was he already kind of in that conversation to begin with?
I think he's already in the conversation, to be honest with you. But at the same time, I think every time he stepped on the court, he earned more. And I think the excitement around him is genuine. Like, you're watching a kid who just seems to get it. And the last time I really feel like we had a rookie walk in the door and really just got it was Tyrese Halliburton. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to turn into Tyrese Halliburton and start averaging 20 and 10.
James C.
Well, but look at what he, like, the passing. Like, there's a game this preseason where he had 9 assists, a game where he had 7 assists, and it's not basic passing. Man, that pocket pass he dropped down, I think it was to
Isaac Jones with the left hand.
Yeah, Isaac Jones.
Nasty, bro.
Just gorgeous. And the fact that he can defend multiple positions. And I love what Doug's done here, because he's pushed him. He sent him out there against the Clippers, and he started defending James Harden and then Kawhi Leonard and then Chris Paul. And then you come back the next game and it's like, oh, you didn't see enough Hall of Famers in your last game. How about we throw Luka Doncic at you? Like, this is incredible to see him defending all of these different players. Now, it hasn't been perfect, and he's learning, he's making mistakes, and he's also realizing that he's a rookie and he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. But these are like learning and teaching moments that I think are spectacular for him. And I could very well see a way in which he's a starting small forward or maybe even the starting shooting guard on this team in a year, in 2 years, where, you know, he's got that kind of future. I think we've gone from him being like a potential rotational player, maybe, to a rotational player with full, you know, starter upside, and probably not that far away either. So it's really good to see. I don't think that there's Zach LaVine has had the best camp out of anybody, the best preseason out of anybody. Mm-hmm. He's been phenomenal every single time he stepped on the floor. But if you're going to give like the second, you know, nod, it would probably be to either Domas or Neek. And I thought Domas before he got hurt was really good. And Neek has just been phenomenal almost every single time he's been out there. And so watching him grow, especially with a whole group of veterans, it's almost like he said it the other night, because I asked him about playing against all these star players. And he said, I don't really get starstruck. And you see that, because even on his own team, you can look around very quickly and go, oh my gosh, that's Domantas Sabonis. Oh my gosh, that's DeMar DeRozan and Russell Westbrook. Like, the Kings do have like Hall of Fame caliber players, star level players at a couple of positions. And for him to be able to fit in seamlessly, it just looks like he's one of the guys, and he brings so much more than a couple of the guys that, you know, he's going to be fighting for minutes. He's a better rebounder. He's a more willing passer, and he's a more versatile defender. You're wondering whether he can hold up and as a rookie, but I don't know. If he brings all those other intangibles, I'm kind of on board with him playing as many minutes as you can get him.
Yeah, and that's by any means necessary. Like, however you have to get him into the lineup, you can, and you can probably fluctuate at a couple of different positions to just make sure he's out there on the floor. He by all early accounts, he is extremely talented.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring a lot to this basketball team. It's just a question of how much and when. Like, how quickly can they get him really heavily involved? How quickly do they want to get him really heavily involved? Like, I remember Tyrese's rookie year, Kings were winning games. Like, and then he got hurt, and all of a sudden, like, the Kings couldn't win anymore. Like, they fell apart without Tyrese Halliburton on the floor. And I'm just envisioning this scenario where you've got Keegan out and Domas out and maybe potentially Dennis out. And it's like, no, it's cool. Neek is here. And the Kings rally, you know, 3 wins to start the season.
That'd be crazy.
And these guys start to come back, and Neek catches a cold, misses a game. Oh, Kings lost.
Yeah, you know, I see, like, Michael Fregerin here in the chat says, is Jalen Williams a ceiling comp for Neek? I'm not putting that on Neek Clifford yet. Let's see who he becomes. I'm intrigued. I think he's a better passer than Jalen Williams, more creative passer. But whether he plays with the same amount of force or has the same athleticism as Jalen Williams, and not only that, but Jalen Williams is like a second-team All-NBA defender. Like, that's a big thing to put on Neek Clifford early in his career. What you're hoping is that he's a rotational player that potentially is a long-term starter. And if you get that with a 24th pick in the draft, then you did a spectacular job of drafting.
The thing that I like about Neek too is he's a little bit of a throwback to the old days of the NBA draft, because he's an older player. I think he was a senior at Colorado State. It played a little while. So when they get drafted, they come into the NBA, they're grown-ups and they've seen basketball, and there's not as much of a learning curve as opposed to an 18, 19-year-old who still has to develop, still has to learn the game. This is how it used to be when people would draft players, because they stay in college, so they were like 21, 22 years old. So they come into the league and they were ready to play basketball. And that's kind of what I see from Neek Clifford, because he did have such a long college career. The learning curve isn't as great as it is one of the younger guys usually.
Yeah, I totally agree, Kenny. You know, he played 3 years at Colorado, 2 years at Colorado State. And the things that I really like about him is, like, you can see where he worked on different aspects of his game. So, you know, as a rookie, as a freshman, he's at like 0.4 assists per game. Then it's 1.3, 1.5, then it's 3, and then it's 4.4 in his senior year. That's really, really good to see a player who's quietly learning and understanding. The same with his free throw attempts. He figured out how to get to the line, which is a skill. His rebounding numbers go from like 4.6 to 3.9 to 7.6 to 9.6. That's just a player who's figuring it out. And, you know, they really had a game plan. We talked to one of the assistants at Colorado State when Neek was there, but now he's elevated to the head coach. And he was super clear that, like, they had a game plan to talk Neek into sticking around for a fifth year. And that game plan equated to him converting his game from a 3-and-D player to like an all around basketball player. And they worked really hard to get his 3-point shot up, to get his rebounding numbers up, and then for him to create shots for himself and for others. And while doing that, get to the free throw line. All of those things, Neek just checked all the boxes, and it's why his numbers look so impressive. And this is the one thing I kept saying, because you remember when we got to Tyrese Haliburton in the draft, right? That is the pandemic hits. And I wrote, I think it was 23 mock drafts for NBC Sports, all off of the same exact draft. And with Tyrese, it was very specific. If he can translate his game to the next level, he's going to be incredible. If he can't, he'll fall by the wayside like so many others. It's not like there haven't been players like him, like Johnny Davis, who come into the league and should have all of those same skills, right? But it's all about being able to translate your skill set to the next level. And Tyrese Haliburton was not this type of passer in college. Did he make passes? Yeah, did. But we're talking about a guy who averaged 5 assists a game, something like that, at the college level, not a guy who averaged 10. And so watching Neek take all of these steps, and then the first thing he does in preseason and in summer league is start throwing up, you know, numbers on the assist chart, like close to 10. And you're like, wait a sec, where does this come from? And that just comes from having an extremely high basketball IQ and getting it and figuring out how to fit in. So I think the early results here are really good. I don't think he's going to average 9.8 rebounds per game at any point in his career, but the fact that from a guard or a small forward position, he might be able to get you 5 or 6 is really good. And you're hoping that all of these numbers start to translate.
Do you think that type of, like, the type of way that he's played, does that maybe put a little pressure on DC, or a little pressure on his coach staff? Like, hey, yeah, I know what we got here in terms of what our roster, we got to get Neek out there. We got to get him out on the basketball floor.
Yeah, it does. You know, I told you guys early on, I think one of the most difficult things for Doug Christie this season, and they just added to the problem, is if you have a veteran, a future Hall of Famer, a multi-time All-Star at whatever position, how do you tell them that they're going to have to sit? How do you tell them that they're not going to get to play 30-plus minutes? I mean, you go back, you know, the year before the Kings signed DeMar DeRozan, he led the league in minutes played at 37.8 per game. Last year, he's one of the Kings' leaders in minutes per game. Like, there could come a point where Neek Clifford just pushes his way in. And to be honest, his ability to shoot the three, his ability to defend multiple positions, his ability to pass and be a willing passer, his ability to rebound. Those are all things that he walks into the league. He doesn't have the experience of DeMar DeRozan, but he might be better at every single one of those aspects of the game than DeMar. And so you're going to have to, like, there's going to have a point in the season where, like, tough conversations, or it'll take care of itself, whether it's trade, whether it's injury, whether it's having to play a different position. You know, I think that that's where, like, this Kings team, it just has so many question marks going into it. But yeah, I could definitely see a moment during this season where he's pushing for 24 to 30 minutes a game. And it's just because he's so good and he helps winning. That's I think the biggest key is that his style of play and the things that he's doing on the court usually translate to victories. And so you're hoping that you've found like a diamond in the rough here.
Let's come back. Hang on, Hammer. We've obviously got a lot more to talk about as the Sacramento Kings season gets underway in just a couple of days, Wednesday in Phoenix. We'll talk more about the addition of Russell Westbrook and what these first couple of games might look like and why they might not look the same on a night-to-night basis. That's ahead here with Either One KC and our insider from the insiders is James Hamm on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 30.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
1920. All right, we're back here with James Hamm as we prepare for the upcoming season ahead. Of course, the NBA season gets underway tomorrow.
Yeah, man.
Houston in Oklahoma City. And then we've got the Warriors at the Lakers.
Live on NBC.
NBA. Oh, there's a live rendition of Round Ball Rock.
Oh, boy.
That's a little unnecessary. Just roll the tape.
just play the damn basketball game. Would you please?
That's what happens, though, when everyone, for however long it's been off of NBC, just, oh, Round Ball Rock, like, everyone, this is what you guys wanted, so.
I didn't want like, to lie.
Oh, yeah, you know, I miss you. It so much. Just I miss it so much. Thank no. you. You know what? Thank yeah. you. Kenny, yeah, you don't get to complain. Just sit there and enjoy it, all right? Whoever else,
well,
I miss Round Ball Rock, no, blah, blah, blah.
I never say anything about Round Ball Rock, but I will. NBC is back. This is going to be fire.
No, yes, you did. What do you mean?
I don't.
You came in here like a month ago. Yeah, they played something with the da-da-da-da. Oh, gave me goosebumps.
Well, yeah, because NBC, Round Ball Rock itself is whatever. Because you know what? Fox FS1 bastardized it by having Round Ball Rock on college basketball for the last 5 years. So I don't miss it in that respect, but I'm hyped. I'm hyped. NBC got the game tomorrow. Opening night is about to be lit. And we're going to hear from Michael Jordan tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I want to hear what Mike got to say.
Yep.
Do you?
Me too. Do you? I'm very.
I hear what Mike got to say.
I don't see how this goes well for Michael Jordan. Like what? Like what do you want him to do?
Analyze the game. Analyze what he sees.
Well, Chris Collinsworth said it was a look into the mind of Michael Jordan.
Oh yeah,
right?
He did. It was like, how is that being, Chris? Shut up, man. Yeah. Like, Collinsworth, we're about sick of hearing from you.
Well, Mike, I just got to tell you, Mike, the way Penix throws the ball, I mean, it's like a rocket.
Can you do something about this?
He hears it. It's just like The Rock. Sorry, you didn't hear it at first. He heard it.
I've never heard The Rock.
You need a little bit more.
What are you talking about? What? No. Don't do that. Do not look like that. What are you talking about?
James, I'm sorry, Kings fans.
We developed a 1-star into a 5-star with that one.
Wow. Don't do that, Jesse. That's cap.
Oh, man.
Doug has said several times this training camp in preseason about he's used that old coach's line about it's not about who starts, it's who finishes. And obviously there have been a lot of questions about who's going to be in the starting lineup because the absence now of Keegan Murray and Domantas Sabonis. And I really feel like Doug is positioning something to where, because again, he has said it so many times that he's preparing us for, yeah, that closing lineup's not going to be the starting lineup. Like, you're going to see some different looks, and a lot like he did last year, he's going to coach this game on a feel. And if he feels like someone is off that night or is not playing well, or if this matchup is better for this matchup, like, he's going to do it. It's not going to be a cookie cutter rotation for Doug Christie in this version of the Kings.
No, I think the last 5 minutes of a game are going to be the most difficult coaching job he has to do. Like, first of all, you hope that you're in a game, or that you hope that you're close enough that you can either come back and win, or that you've got a lead that you can hold on to. But in those situations, man, you're going to have Malik Monk chirping at you. You're going to have Russell Westbrook chirping at you. You can have DeMar DeRozan looking around saying, don't you know who I am? You know, and then at the same time, you're going to have guys like Keon Ellis who play defense and shoot threes. You know, you're going to have guys like Keegan Murray who, you know, when he's back, you're going to need his defense. You're going to have guys like Domas. Like, I don't know who's going to finish games, but, you know, this is where I think the one ball thing is going to be a problem. You know, there's only one ball, and how do you deal with that during the last 5 minutes of a game? Like, when guys are literally clamoring to go win the game for you, and it's like, okay, we need a hierarchy here. And if they can't establish a hierarchy, this thing could really be a mess. And I don't know how they do that, especially with, you know, Domas and Keegan out for, you know, the beginning of the season. It's going to be a little difficult, but the quicker that you figure out the roles for each player and who does what, the better this team can be. And if you don't figure out those roles, and if you're constantly fighting, then this thing is going to go off the rails like super quick.
Or that could not happen at all. You know what I mean? Like, that could not be the case. They could understand. They could be good team players. They could be, you know, guys that understand their roles and understand what's going on here and work together to win some games. It doesn't. If Russell Westbrook is just having a regular game, but Keon is playing like he did on Friday, and it leads to a win, or they're winning or playing winning basketball, I don't know if Russell Westbrook is going to yell at Doug Christie because he wasn't in for the final 4 minutes of the game instead of Keon Ellis.
Yeah, but we're going to have to wait and see how that works out, because some of these guys, it doesn't matter like how the game was going. You know, when it comes to the last couple of minutes of the game, we saw last year sort of I don't know, like, it wasn't dueling banjos. It didn't play out well at all with De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan trying to figure out who was the boss in the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game. It didn't work.
That guy who was averaging like 12 points a game in the fourth quarter. I'm just throwing out a number, but DeMar was pretty good in those situations last year.
Well, in the year before that, De'Aaron Fox won the clutch player of the year.
He was really good in those situations too. They both should be out there in those moments if you're trying to win the game.
No, they were both out there in those moments, but, you know, who was taking the shot didn't always, like, track. So, and we'll have to see how it works out this year.
What's the biggest question you want to see answered on Wednesday. I don't even know that anything can get answered the first game of the season. So I'm going to rephrase that a little bit. What are you looking to? What scenario? What storyline? What position battle? What rotation thing are you looking forward to seeing the most unfold on Wednesday?
Yeah, I honestly don't really care about who plays and who doesn't. I don't care about it's just, do you come out and look like you're ready to fight? And whether you win or you lose, do you make it a contest? Does it look like you're blending together, that you're finding chemistry? You know, again, I have my own personal, like, who I, the lineups I would go with versus what they might go with. But like at the end of the day, none of the who starts, who finishes, any of that matters. The only thing that matters is, did you play hard and did you give yourself an opportunity to win? Like, if this team comes out and they look like they did in the first two preseason games, like, that's not good. You know, it can't be a continuation of that. We need to see the grit and the grind and what we saw from them on Friday night. That's what I'm looking for. Can you play that style when the, you know, when DeMar DeRozan and Russell Westbrook are part of the rotation and Malik Monk, can you play that style, the never say die, fight until the end, you know, push people around, play physical? And if you can't, it's going to be a long season. Like, that's the way out of this thing for this team is to go out there and play the brand of basketball your coach is asking for. You've got to play defense. You've got to play physical. You've got to be the team that punches. And if you're not, you know, things can get a little wonky pretty quick.
Do you think they have enough of the personnel to be able to execute Doug's game plan?
I mean, whatever game plan it is, it's up to Doug to make a game plan that fits the roster that he has.
Well, I meant like the, you know, punch first, all this other stuff, the things that he likes to do. Not all 12 or 15 guys are going to be that, or even all 8 of your rotational guys aren't going to be that. But do you think he has enough of those guys to implement that the way he wants to?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they've got enough. Like, I don't know about, you know, like, their bigs aren't like enforcer types. But, you know, I look at guys like Russ and guys like Monk and guys like Schroeder, like those, if those are sort of your leaders on the court from a guard position, I think that you should have that type of personality where you're somebody who's not going to back down. You're not going to get pushed around. You know, saying that, you know, it's got to be something that kind of like permeates through the entire group. You know, I don't know, where were we? Oh, Kyle found the stats on ESPN where they were ranking all 30 teams. And I think they had the Kings at 21. And one of the stats was that the Kings led the league in blowbys. Like, if your guards are going to get blown by, like, it doesn't matter who your center is or your power forward is. If, you know, it's a free run at the basket every time, you're going to lose. And your defense is going to be bad. So these guys have to step up and have that. Don't just be talkers. You know, you got to show. You got to do what it is that you're preaching and what Doug's preaching. And some of these guys have to be the, you know, the living embodiment of Doug Christie on the court. And that's, you know, to give critique and to yell at teammates and hold people accountable in the moment. And that's something, in, like, honestly, I think lacked big time last year. The lack of accountability on the court was tough. But this time around, like, look, if someone decides they're going to take some ill-advised shot, pull them. If someone gets blown by, pull them. Because you do, especially in the backcourt, you got a ton of depth. Like, you know, if someone doesn't want to play the defense that Doug's talking about, then they can come sit by you.
Yeah, but what if it's Domas? Angry about it.
Well, that's fine. If it's Domas, then you're up, Drew Eubanks. It is what it is. I mean, but like, Domas isn't the one who's standing out and at the top of the key getting blown by. That's not typically the issue. You know, Domas is a guy who's late to rotate and fouls somebody. I'll give you that. But, you know, like, if somebody's holding their own out on the perimeter, Domas has always been a really strong position defender. He's just not a shot blocker. And, you know, again, with Keegan Murray out, this team doesn't have a shot blocker outside of Malik Monk, Keon Ellis, Those are your shot blocker options.
James said something earlier that I've kind of have been wondering a little bit, and we didn't see it in the preseason at all, especially since Keegan got hurt. I did wonder if they were going to try to find a way to work Keon into the starting lineup. Because he's the closest. I mean, arguably, he's a better defender than Keegan Murray. But he's the closest thing to a defensive presence that you could have in that starting lineup that's not Keegan. And I don't know how. I know James laid out a scenario where you pretty much just move everybody down and get Keon into the starting lineup. I don't know that that's feasible. Maybe it is versus Phoenix. Maybe it doesn't matter against Utah. It doesn't feel like something you could do against the Los Angeles Lakers, but I have wondered if that's something that Doug is at least thinking about and contemplating trying just to have that defensive presence on the floor in Keon Ellis.
Yeah, I think Keon is your best perimeter defender. I think that Keegan is a more versatile defender. He can defend, you know, probably 1 through 5, where I think Keon is more of a 1-2, and sometimes he can defend the 3. So I do think that there's some versatility. You lose some versatility with Keon as far as a defender. But if I'm looking at this logically and you don't have, you know, Keegan who stretches the floor and plays defense, Keon is probably the next best option. And yeah, you're going to be small, but that's okay. Like, make up for that with pace, make up for it with, you know, moving quickly within your offensive sets. Like, there's a lot of, you know, gamble a little bit on defense, put pressure and make people make mistakes. That's how you get away with playing small ball. You know, like, the Kings don't have a lot of options here, especially, you know, with Domas out for at least the first week of the season or the first two games of the season. So, you know, if you don't have the ability to stop anybody coming downhill, you got to stop people from getting downhill. You've got to initiate contact at way up higher. So I think Keon Ellis might give you the best opportunity to do that. But I also think it could be a game by game basis because, you know, game one, you're going to play, you know, Phoenix, who has, you know, a couple of big centers, but they don't have a bunch of height at the power forward position. Mm-hmm. You know, then you're going to go up against the next night. You're going to go up against two 7-footers in Utah in the starting lineup. So how are you going to deal with that? And possibly a 6'10" small forward. So, like, I think they're going to have to make some adjustments here and there. Then again, maybe that gives you the best opportunity is to go up against a Lauri Markkanen with a DeMar DeRozan, with Neat Clifford, and don't let him, you know, like, if he's going to post you up, you're in trouble. But if he's going to try to take you off the dribble, then go take the ball from him. Like, you're a much smaller player, a much more agile player. Go be aggressive. So I think there are ways in which you can combat sort of the size issue, especially with Keegan and Domas out. But, like, if they win a whole bunch of games right off the bat, I mean, we're going to be talking smoke and mirrors here. This will be a little bit like what Steve Kerr did early in last season with Golden State, where he's running 10, 11, 12-man rotations out there and figuring out ways to confuse the opposition. And then eventually the league catches up to you. What the Kings need is to figure out how to do that until they get some of their players back, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, Doug has his work cut out for him just in general. But now with these injuries, even more so cut out for him. But I think what you talked about earlier, Hammer, is really the key. You just want to make sure there's a certain level of competitiveness and a certain mindset that you want to go into these games with. If you're Doug Christie and you're thinking about the guys on your team, a physical nature, like I said, a competitive nature that no matter who's on the court in the starting lineup and all this other stuff, we're all locked into the fact that we're going to compete at a high level. I think we saw that on Friday. I know it was just preseason. I'm not putting crazy stock into it, but they were just out there competing on Friday, and you bring that level of focus to every game. I think that's a good starting spot for Doug Christie and what he's trying to do with this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kings are going to have to be a death by a thousand paper cuts type of team. You know, they're going to have to be a team that beats you with a bunch of little plays, not by overpowering you or anything else, at least until they get healthy. You know, that's, and it's not easy. It's not easy to be one of those types of teams, but every time the ball's on the ground, you need to dive on the floor and go get it. You know, I played in slow pitch softball games where you're playing up against a team with like eight guys who hit the ball over the fence, and you beat a team like that by hitting 30 singles, and you just torment them, and you don't let them get more than their two home runs that they can get. And that's how you beat them. And I think for the Kings, it's going to kind of be the same way. Just come out there, you know, keep sending waves of players at them, you know, keep giving different looks, give Nate Clifford some opportunity to play the one, the two, the three, the four, and see how it goes, and confuse teams by doing it. But at the end of the day, like, nobody feels bad for the Kings. Like, again, we talked about Memphis a little while ago. Memphis has like half their team is on the IR to start the season, and it got worse today. So yeah, it's just like, that's kind of the nature of the beast.
When you say death by a thousand paper cuts, you say that because you don't, because the team doesn't have the best ability to hit the three.
Yeah, I mean that. Well, I mean they're not going to be a good 3-point shooting team. They're not going to be a just to open the season. They're not going to be a good rebounding team unless they sit there and fight and do team rebounding. Like, you can't walk into a season with basically 21 rebounds per game sitting on the sidelines and think that you're going to be a good team, a good rebounding team. So unless you're hitting all your shots, you're going to have trouble. So this team needs to, they need to go rebound, you know, really, really well. They need to help each other out on defense. They need to have those gambling plays where they get transition buckets that make it easier. Like, if you're going to go into a half court game with a bunch of teams, you're going to have a lot of trouble just because of the lack of size, the lack of 3-point shooting, all of those things. So, you know, again, a little bit of smoke and mirrors will be needed in the first couple of games of the season, but maybe even the first month of the season while you're trying to figure everything out.
Hammer, you ready, man? You ready? The regular season number 15, 16?
16.
16.
16.
Here we go.
I guess I'm ready. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think Hammer's ever ready for the start of the season.
I think I'm always ready for the start of the season. I think this year, physically, I'm in much better shape than I have been in, you know, more than a decade. So I'm excited about that. But I also hate that it takes like a week of preseason and my diet and everything else has already gone out the window, because that's the life. But yeah, overall, like, I mean, I'm ready to kind of figure out what this puzzle is, and I don't think we're going to know for a little while, especially due to injury. This is going to be an interesting group and an interesting team to watch play. And if they figure it out and they just get it, then it could be a fun season. If they don't, it could be a really long season. And I think a lot of people are leaning towards that second part. So we gotta see.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion or belief, or I'm just naive enough to be like, whether the season goes good or bad, whatever, I'm just anxious to see it play out. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be mad today.
All right. Look, they can be everything everyone is saying they're going to be, and maybe I'm a little late to the party with it. That's fine. I'd rather know than guess.
Yeah.
So.
And Hammer, I'm completely agree. I don't think we're going to know for a while. And if we do know, it's not good. Like, if we know something about this basketball team in the first few weeks of the season, it's not good. Because there's nothing the Kings are going to do to, like, separate themselves or get out. Like, I think the most realistic options is they get off to a fine start. They're battling. They're taking on some of these good teams. Hovering around 500, maybe just above, maybe just below, nothing dramatic either way, or they're bad. I don't think there's an 11-2 start ahead. That's the thing that I don't think is here for this basketball team, is an 11-2
start.
That
would be the most shocking of all scenarios.
But see, you know what, and how on edge would Kings fans be knowing the Warriors started last year the way that they did, and then for a solid 2 months look like the worst team in professional basketball. Mm. Yep. So unless we're trading for Jimmy Butler in February, like, I don't think that's.
If this team is 10-10 after 20, then number one, it's a mild miracle, but number two, I think they have something, and I think they're figuring things out, because that's without Keegan, that's without Domas for a couple of games at least. But then on top of that, that's against one of the most ridiculous stretches that you're going to face in your schedule, and it's going to be tough. So if they figure out a way to come out of the first 20 games at 500, this team will finish, I believe, above 500. If not, it's going to be, they'll be chasing their tail the whole season. And you hope that they've got enough in them, especially the last 25 games, to make up ground. But this could be, it could be a very difficult run if they don't at least play near 500 basketball in the first month.
Well, that's Wednesday.
NBA
basketball returns tomorrow.
NBA basketball returns tomorrow. I'm going to do this. It's dangerous on the show, but I'm going to do
this. Oh, don't do this. You're not doing a record projection, are you?
No.
Okay.
There was a football game played at Sac State on Saturday. There was the president, Dr. Luke Wood, on the broadcast saying some things. The Montana head coach has responded and called him a clown. Dr. Luke Wood will be here tomorrow.
Oh,
on D'Lo and
yeah,
Casey
wow,
at 12:30. Wow. I know it's dangerous.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. NFL game streaming is looking forward to it.
Bro, when is NBA game streaming?
Hey, you know what's really great? A football game is about to start at 3:55. we will see you guys tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. right here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Game 7!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.